America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I, of course, am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Filippo D'Alfa, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Elogi. Say hi, guys.
Yo.
Hello.
This week we all learned that it's still not cool to dress up in blackface. And, I don't know why we keep having to remind people of this shit.
Yeah, I guess in the 80s, nobody wanted to dress up as Marty McFly or the Ghostbusters.
we'll explain this further, but basically, some stupid shit went down in Virginia, and we're going to have to explain it. But other than that, we got some other stuff we're going to be talking about. We got some celebrity news involving AMI, the people that published the National Enquirer. Let's just say AMI probably will not exist this time next year. Also, we'll have some stuff. Apparently, we have an Ontario man instead of a Florida man this week.
Apparently, same premise, though.
Yeah,
this is a thing now. Apparently,
yeah. Also, we're going to learn some stuff about climate change. Apparently, it's going to affect how the Earth looks in about 8 years. We're also going to get some news about the Oscars, some more entertainment news, stuff from Netflix. Oh, yeah, and sometimes Patrick, at his work, he sees weird shit, and he's going to tell you all about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, with all that, let's start as we all do. Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So, okay, I finished the first book of the Bobaverse. Two more of those left. Probably start and finish it by this time next week.
Yep.
Yeah, they're short books, and they're fun. It's remarkable at how creative this guy is with this premise. It's good. What else have I been doing? My usual Doom stuff is still ongoing. I'm learning a lot more about it than I ever thought I was going to. So now I'm at the point where I'm thinking, you know, I can probably write some custom scripts that nobody else has done before.
Cool.
So that's going to be fun. What else have I been doing? I've still been playing my usual stuff there. What's its face? Yeah, Tetris Effect, Defense Grid 2. All that other stuff. My RetroPie is still coming along quite nicely. Found a nice theme that I like, and yeah, it's basically just applied, and now I'm just basically adding background music so I have something to listen to while it's on the menu.
Nice.
Yeah. Can't go wrong when you put stuff like, you know, Pink Floyd and era-appropriate stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just been kind of a chill week. I mean, we've had some weird weather. But
I've been chilled this week.
You have been chilled, yeah. We haven't. It's one of those rare occasions where I think we actually had better weather this week than you did. So go figure.
It's known to happen.
Yeah. So yeah, that's been pretty much it for me. What about you, Pat?
Final Fantasy 14 is just the gift that keeps on giving for me. I am still glued to Stormblood. I have a controller in my hands as I speak. I got Samurai up to level 70, so now I'm working on Dark Knight, which is a completely different role that I'm used to playing on a team, because for the first 5 years and change that I was playing Final Fantasy 14, I'd stuck exclusively to melee DPS classes, and now all of a sudden I'm tanking, and that forces me to completely relearn every dungeon in the game, and it's refreshing. But I am turning out to be a better tank than I ever thought I would be, for the simple fact that it's the Dwight Schrute approach to tanking. I think of all the things that an idiot would do, and then I avoid doing all those things. Having had so much experience as a DPS, I have an encyclopedic knowledge of things that tanks do that piss me off.
Yeah.
And I just take special care not to do any of those things, and that has made me very successful so far. Yeah. And so I didn't think it was going to go this well, but I'm pleasantly surprised at how my short run using a tanking job has been going. So
no Leroy Jenkins for Patrick.
No. And whenever one of the DPs try to do something like that, I just let them take the hate. It is my catchphrase that if you play stupid games, you will win stupid prizes. Mm-hmm. And I have no problem allowing my party members to do that if they try to force me into a speed run of a dungeon.
Yeah.
So it's been a lot of fun, though. I'm really enjoying it, and I didn't think it would be going this well. It's just fun being able to look at dungeons in new ways. Yeah. And having all of this content, you know, honestly, over 5 years of content at this point, refreshed. Yeah. So
Keto.
That's what I've been doing.
All right, Chris, what about you?
First off, it's freezing cold.
Yes.
After being in the 50s yesterday, it's wind chill is at 6 right now. So that's a good drop. It was mostly in the 50s all week. Lots of rain yesterday. Luckily, the freezing did not happen until most of the water was evaporated. So not too much ice out there, luckily. But yeah, I think it's supposed to warm up a bit in the next couple of days. But then I think we're supposed to get some snow. So it's not going to get too much better. But yeah, I've been doing a good bit of shit. I watched the final episodes of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Mm-hmm. This is the final episodes in any of the series.
Mm.
They did a good job. There's a lot of ridiculous shit happens, which is that show's MO. Even including a whole sequence where I guess Kimmy wonders what it would have been like if what her life had been like if she did not get kidnapped and hidden underground in a nuclear bunker for years, which lots of weird shit happens. And conveniently, like a sitcom kind of way, the main characters still somehow find a way to get involved with each other. But yeah, there's lots of good shit that happens there. And yeah, it has a good ending. People should definitely check that out. Especially just being a four-season show. Not too many episodes in it. But then I ended up starting Russian Doll on Netflix.
Oh boy.
Which is a show that is very much influenced by Groundhog Day.
Yep.
So it features a woman named Nadia Volokov, I think her name is, or Volvokov, who the start of her loop is sort of in the bathroom at a party that her friends are throwing for her birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as it happens at the first date, she's looking for her cat, ends up crossing the street as she sees the cat. And then gets hit and killed by a car.
Yeah.
Then wakes up back at the bathroom, like looking in the mirror. Not really in the same way that in Groundhog Day, like it's a finite, you know, day cycle, day night cycle kind of thing. It's basically until she dies next. And so she obviously avoids the car this time. Like finds her cat, ends up falling over into the pier nearby and drowning, and wakes up back at this party, and weirdly like spitting out a bunch of water out of her mouth. It kind of keeps going in a way that's like she's still in the state of kind of going crazy, where I'm at a couple episodes in. Even so far as like getting checked out by some medical people, to which she starts getting a bit hysterical and causes a crash and dies and wakes up back at the party. And yeah, it's been pretty cool so far. Definitely look forward to seeing how it progresses. I think it's 8 episodes, about 20 minutes each, so not too long. But there's definitely a whole, I think she's at the part where she's starting to try to test this new thing out, and do some investigation, trying to figure out why this happened and all that. But yeah, that's a it's a pretty cool show. I'm looking forward to putting some more time into that. As for games, I've been playing more Phantasy Star. Nice. I have a spaceship now.
Mm-hmm.
A very weird spaceship that can only go to three places. But yeah, I ended up weirdly spending a lot of time trying to get through the dungeon that Medusa's at the top of. Because, like, huh, this seems like an important thing to do. And I ended up clearing it out, getting to Medusa, and dying every single time I try. Because she obviously, you know, kills one of your people each turn. Mm-hmm. So it's got to be a quick kill so far. I ended up giving up on that, just going back to my walkthrough and figuring out what I'm supposed to do next. Which is, yeah, me kind of figuring out how to get the doctor on board. Because the thing I don't really ever think about is that depending on the person you're talking to, you might get, they might, like, turn you down for things, and if you just keep talking to them, they'll relent. And so, like, he's one of them where I just talked to him, he's like, no, go fuck off. I was like, oh, if I kept talking to him, he would have relented and helped out. But yeah, I got Alice with the lightsaber. That's light space saber, not the Star Wars lightsaber.
Of course.
I've got everybody kitted out on almost max out gear. Mainly because when I was done with that Medusa dungeon, I had like 33,000 gold.
Mm.
So I was like, okay, I can buy pretty much anything I need. I think I still have like 17,000. Because none of this stuff is all that expensive. But I ended up just stupidly grinding in this dungeon, getting tons of money and shit out of it. Mm. Like, I have a full inventory for the most part. That's just full of, like, cola and flashers and shit. It's like, I don't really need any of this shit. Because I got two healers with me, as well as... Generally, I keep pretty quick access to the hospitals at any point. So I'm making good progress in this. And I've kind of hit a good point where it's not too hard at this point. It's basically just me figuring out what I need to do and doing it. Which I think I'm on the second planet just exploring around. I got the Land Rover now.
Mm.
I can go over like water and shit and explore a little bit more readily. But yeah, that's been a good time. And I've been playing Defense Grid 2 on the Switch. I can confirm the load times are pretty fast. The weird thing is that kind of hitches up a little bit in the loading screens. So as you know, Phil, it kind of displays like alien language on the load screens and then kind of translates it as it's loading. And it hitches up on that a lot of times. In a weird
way. Like a hard crash?
No, it just stutters and then sputters and goes through the rest of it real quick. And I had one time it actually crashed, which is the first time I ever had a Switch game crash, which was weird.
Yep.
Which I got the weird message, is like, this application is closed. It's like, okay, that's weird. Because especially I was trying to quit out to the main menu, the dashboard, and close it. It crashed on that whole point. So I was like, okay, something weird happened. So I haven't had that issue again.
Like,
but
the amount of system resources you needed to go back to the dashboard was more than the system had available.
Yeah, the game wasn't. It just stopped mid, like translation, and it never went any further. And it's like, okay. At this point, it normally gets past this. I guess I'll try and quit out. And it's like, shit itself, and then close.
Yeah. Yep.
I think they said they're actually working on a patch that's going to address a lot of that stuff.
I also had an issue where just clicking on a space to bring up the menus to pick a tower to put in there sometimes just doesn't highlight anything. It's unresponsive.
Yeah.
So I have to close that and then open it back up again. And then it usually shows up the second time.
That's weird.
That's annoying when you're doing things like, I don't know, trying to build towers or bases or
the whole point of the game.
Especially when you're in a, oh shit, I need to get this built now. Why? Fuck. I need the damn menus. Mm. But otherwise, it's really quite good, and they kind of streamlined the progression a bit as far as just playing it as a campaign.
Yeah.
So when you go to like the main menus, it just has a continue game option on there, okay, versus just, hey, just show me all the missions, and you just figure out what to do, which is pretty neat. I think I'm just going through on normal. There's even an option to just set the campaign difficulty.
Yeah,
you don't have to like go in like, okay, I want to do mission 5, and how about easy, and that sort of stuff. It even lets you set the loadout between missions, which has also been a weird point for, because I think that's what happened when the game crashed. Is I went to the loadout because I unlocked something new, then went to go continue and just like, just had a fart, brain fart, which is real weird. But yeah, it's a very good version of that game. I'd probably put it below the PS4 version because I never had the PS4 version crash at all.
Yeah,
I have like any issues like that, but
yeah. But, you know, you got to consider that the hardware it's running on. It's kind of, the game runs like a dog on the Xbox One, and the Switch is less powerful than the Xbox One. So
that Xbox One version is very special.
Yeah.
I've never seen a game load like that compared to two other versions load pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And that one's like a minute, at least. And it's like the Xbox One X did not change that at all.
Nope.
There's no hardware acceleration of the way that game works.
There's no saving that version.
Well, no. The frame rate is a bit better on the Xbox One X, but that's about it.
Yeah. It's kind of like how Fallout Shelter on the Switch runs better than it does on the Xbox One.
Yep.
Because I go into the questing stuff where you're going through essentially these buildings, taking out enemies and such, and it screen tears more than I've ever seen in any game on the Xbox One version.
Gross.
And the Switch and PS4 have nothing like that. And they've never updated it, fixed that stuff. So it's just kind of amazing to play that. It's like, I used to not really notice screen tearing, because usually it's not that bad in most games. And this one's just like, oh my god, I usually just scroll the cursor around just to watch it, because it's beautiful. Beautifully bad. It's all I can see, all of the screen tearing. You can't move a single inch without it. It doesn't happen in like the regular like vault mode.
Nope.
So it's just weird that it only happens in this one part of the game. And even the Xbox One X version doesn't do anything to help it. Yeah. So yeah, like the whole like Microsoft promise, like, oh, every game's gonna run better. It's like, no, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably plenty of games that just run exactly the same because they were made for one spec.
Yeah.
Weren't made to dynamically increase frame rate or whatever. If there happens to be other versions of it, but yeah, that's been pretty good. I also played a little bit of Apex Legends, which is the new Titanfall spinoff we talked about on Day Zero.
Yep.
Yeah, we said it was coming soon. We didn't realize that soon was going to be the next day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't
and
think
it's free too.
Yeah, I don't think anybody really expected it. Even the people that went to go play it before, before then, because I remember, I think Brad Shoemaker at Giant Bomb's like, shit, we have to go fucking make this video showing the stuff I played now because it's going to be out and be useless. The thing that game does really well is that it makes playing with randos so much better than any other game that has ever existed.
How?
Because you can ping things, like things of interest. You can be like, and it just shows up on the other person's screens. So it's like, hey, here's, you know, a souped up gun. If somebody needs that, they can get this. And you don't have to like actually pull up a mic or anything.
Oh.
And I had somebody in my first match that knew what they were doing. So they're like, hey, we should go this way. And they're pinging like in a direction. It's like, oh, okay, let's go this way. And sort of keeping people together. And his character also had this ability to create a portal. So essentially he would start in one place and kind of helping like me and the other guy that weren't kind of newish to sort of get to, you know, wherever he was at. So he would like create a portal and knew that like I was struggling behind. Usually because I'm just trying to get the handle of the mechanics and the inventory stuff. And they do a really good job of, like, when you're looking at loot, it'll be like, hey, this, you know, this armor is better than what you have. You should probably take it. Or I'll tell you, like, no, this is worse than what you have. Like, don't bother with it, that sort of stuff. It makes it really easy to parse, like, what is better than the other stuff. And I'll tell you, like, oh, you have, you know, a 2X scope. This is a 3X scope. You should probably take it. And also use kind of the Diablo color scheme for it. So you have like green, blue, purple, and orange, I think, for the different grades of stuff. So it just makes it really easy to sort of parse all the information it can give you. Be like, okay, this is better than what I have. I should take this. And yeah, like the communication stuff just works really well. Makes it easy for you to say, hey, you know, we need to go this way. Or I had a guy who tracked. So if, one of my abilities is just kind of send out a pulse to see if there's anybody around me, which for that match was just kind of me having nobody around. Because it's, I think it's like 20 teams of three.
Yeah.
So it's not, it's a pretty big map, so you don't really see too many people that often. Which I think the whole point of that game, as far as their end, is they wanted to make the biggest map possible in their engine that still worked. And then flood it with as many people as it could hold without like shitting itself. And it is a pretty big map. Doesn't have any of the parkour abilities or the Titans or any of that stuff from Titanfall. Because I think they wanted to go to a more grounded experience. I think they can build up to it.
Yeah.
But for now, it's fairly grounded. But it's still a really cool game. And it's one that's taken off pretty well. I think they're claiming they've hit 10 million already.
Wow. Well, it's the best price of all, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely got the.
Free, so.
Yeah.
This seems more respectable, though.
Yeah. Well, it is backed by EA, so take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah, it's got a. There's a little bit of, like, currency stuff you can get, but it kind of has the Fortnite model of here's the store with like, you know, 8 to 10 items that you can buy. And other than that, you can't really get too much else.
Yeah.
And I think all that stuff is cosmetic, so it doesn't really affect anything.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a game that you can tell that they looked at, you know, PUBG, Fortnite, Call of Duty's blackout mode, and came up with some really cool solutions for, how to make it easier to communicate. Like when I got revived by a teammate, it just popped up. It's like, hey, hit R1 to thank them and that sort of stuff. And like your characters talk. So if I was healing up, he would just say, you know, I'll be there in a sec. I'm healing up. Like without me having to do anything. It's like just lots of contextual dialogue and actions you can do to be like more communicative in ways that most shooters don't give a shit about.
Yeah.
Because if you're not talking voice chat, then you have no real way of, you know, giving people context of what's going on. And yeah, that's kind of the big thing it does that really stands out. That and that's definitely a thing that people are noticing and really liking. So this might be the next big shooter as far as innovation is concerned. Because if more games can take advantage of this kind of communication system. You know, playing with randoms won't be this, you know, icky experience.
I'm cool with it.
Yeah. Won't be this, like, either completely, like, boring experience because nobody talks or communicates or does anything. Like a lot of, like, Battlefield games where just people go run off in every direction and don't really work together that well.
Yeah.
Like the iconic experience of somebody gets a Jeep and just drives off as other people chased after them, wanting to get on, that sort of thing. This game does a lot better job to make it fun and interesting to actually work together with people, which is not something that online multiplayer is at this point anymore. Yeah. Multiplayer at this point is, fuck you, I got mine. Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been kind of it. How about you, Brandon?
All right, well, first things first, I am still playing Kingdom Hearts 3. I recently started in San Francisco. That's the Big Hero 6 world. I've also done Monstertropolis, you know, Monsters, Inc.
Yeah.
I've also done Arendelle, you know, Frozen World. And I know what you're asking, what you're thinking. And yes, they do the song.
Oh,
all
it.
Of it.
Oh, damn it.
Both of them. No, it's not like a rhythm game like in the first two ones. So,
So it's completely pointless.
Yeah, kind of. Also, I did find out why so much of this it looks Pixar quality. Turns out Disney and Pixar just gave Square Enix the assets from the movies to use. And basically Nomura and company just sort of adapted it to the Unreal Engine.
I bet that was part of the holdup.
Yeah.
It's like... Okay, you want us to do what? how am I supposed to translate a 40 gigabyte model to?
Hey, it works.
They did.
I mean, it works. To be honest, with a few exceptions, you can barely tell the difference.
Yeah.
Oh, and I also did the Caribbean, which you know is Pirates of the Caribbean world. Actually, that's probably the one section I've had the most fun of in this whole game. And this whole game is amazing. Because they basically took the ship combat from Assassin's Creed 4 and simplified it. And it's just a ton of fun. It really is. That's where I'm at with that right now. Also, I played a little bit of Apex Legends because, you know, what the hell, it's free. And, yeah, it's good. It's basically Fortnite Overwatch, I think, is what people have called it. And that's exactly what it is.
And that's totally fine.
Yeah, it works. You know, I mean, that game came out, like, premiered, what, like Monday? And it pretty much blew up really quickly. But then again,
considering the combination of price and studio, that is no surprise whatsoever.
Also, I mean, let's face it, this is the type of game that's basically just made for Twitch, you know?
Yeah.
So let's see, what else? They are filming another movie in Macon again. Those of you who don't know, the state of Georgia, ever since The Walking Dead kind of took off down here, Georgia has sort of become a new hub for, you know, new location for filmmakers.
Yeah.
Some of you guys, any of you guys ever see that movie 42, the Jackie Robinson movie that Harrison Ford is in?
I cannot say as I have.
Yeah, that part of that was actually filmed just down the road from my house. And right now, they are currently shooting another movie. I'm not sure what it's called, but it's a zombie movie. And once again, they're using the location down from my house. It's a gas station. And the set design people have already come in, and they've basically made it look like it's long abandoned and... You know, there's like undergrowth bursting out of the concrete, and they got vines hanging down from going up, you know, the gas tanks and the overhang and everything. There's like a dilapidated light up signs with the stick on letters that says Jesus will save you. It's.
I mean, it doesn't look like that normally?
No, it doesn't.
Just have to be sure.
Yeah. Normally it works as a diner, but. Let's see, yeah, so I'm also doing my usual reading. Not really much to tell you about on that front. And also my... Okay, so here's something else. So today, while I was doing my school stuff, my mom was, cleaning up the house, and suddenly I hear this squeal coming out from the kitchen, and she comes in
That's not good.
wiping sweat away from her forehead, going, there's a mouse in here.
Whoops.
I don't know if it's just genetic or some kind of force of human evolution that causes all women to go eek when they see a mouse, but let's just say my ears were bleeding afterwards. And again, this isn't a rat, it's just a mouse. A very small mouse, too. You can probably catch this thing very easily, but apparently it was hiding in the dog's food and.
Yeah.
Get an A24.
Yeah.
Yep.
But
If anybody was curious, the movie that's being filmed there right now is Zombieland 2.
oh shit. That's actually something I'm gonna see.
Oh, hell. I guess that means Woody Harrelson is in town. Huh.
Maybe Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Hey, well. Anyway, one more thing happened. I turned 33.
Congratulations. You're
Yeah.
a winner.
I
Happy
am 7 years
apocalypse.
away from 40, so
Yeah.
I can feel the life slowly draining from me every day.
Yeah, it mostly
Yeah.
starts in the knees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, has anybody got anything else they want to add before we move on?
I think I'm good.
I'm good too.
All right. Well, I guess it's time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's random factoid. And since this is gonna be relevant to the stories we're fixing to go into after I'm done with this segment, I figured this would be a proper time to talk about Brandon's random factoid section about something that used to be the original American art form, minstrel shows.
What?
Because if you're wondering where the whole blackface shit came from, there you go. All right.
Okay.
So basically, where do we begin?
Yeah. I have many questions, and one of them is whether I want them answered.
Yeah, okay. So the minstrel show basically came into existence in the early 1800s in the US. It's in many ways kind of a precursor to vaudeville or a variety show.
That's a little too much variety.
Where literally all of the performers are usually, though not always, white people dressed up in blackface. And keep in mind that it doesn't just end there. They also tend to speak and act on stage in very exaggerated, caricaturesque ways. They tend to act, weird, have like lots of, black slang and, usually portray black people as stupid, lazy, superstitious. Originally it just started out with just putting the grease paint on, but then eventually they started adding white paint to exaggerate the size of the lips. Sometimes they would also use red. A lot of these tended to have like a kind of sort of a sort of a kind of like a program that would go with. A lot of them would usually include musical acts, usually involving a lot of what we now call the early sort of precursors to jazz. Lots of banjos, violins, tambourines, that kind of thing. It was sometimes they would have like a burlesque performance with women painted up as black women. There was also they usually had things like, for example, one of the things they did was a thing called a stump speech. It's generally
This has gone
considered.
in so many different directions already.
Yeah, it's generally considered to be like one of the, weirdly enough, one of the beginnings of American stand-up comedy. Basically, what a stump speech was is that it was a monologue from a blackface performer who keep it now keep in mind after, the Civil War ended, suddenly you know, freemen and former slaves were all in were introduced into the franchise. So that made a lot of, for lack of a better term, comic foil for minstrel performers who would then use these types of performances to basically make fun of ambitious wannabe free man politicians and, you know, organizers. For example, they're, you know, usually they would like be like the heads of something like the Lincoln Club or the Washington Fellers or something like that. And they would like talk in like the exaggerated sort of stretched out Southern English that, you know, the black population was said to have had. There were a lot of these minstrel shows came up with a handful of sort of tropes and characters that became kind of a common feature of a lot of different characters. So, like, for example, you know, usually they like, for example, the one probably most infamous of all of them is a character called Jim Crow. And of course,
classy.
Yeah, people know this character is called Jim Crow because that name ended up becoming basically the name for the type of, you know, racial caste system that existed in, well, all of the U.S., to be honest, but mostly in the South. Basically, Jim Crow is, let me see if I can, yeah, so basically he was created by a theater actor by the name of Thomas D. Rice. And basically he's emphasizes all of like popular black stereotypes in one person. He dresses in rags. He wears torn shoes, usually with one toe sticking out, has a battered hat. And, you know, tended to be sort of like a folk trickster, thought that he was more dandy and rich than he actually was, even though he was obviously poor and. It's just a bad time for everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody comes out looking like shit. And the thing is, minstrel shows, even though the actual art form more or less started to die out when vaudeville became a thing, its impact is still very much a big part of popular culture that would go in. For example, how many people here like to watch old school cartoons? Mickey Mouse, Bugs Bunny.
Yeah,
Felix the Cat. I'd
to watch my fair share of that.
Tom and
Jerry. Especially the old ones, the old black and white ones from back in the day.
Yeah.
Where everybody's kind of nimble and bouncy and everything looks like it stretches and everything. And everybody wears gloves.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think that came from?
Hmm.
It's going to give you a moment there.
So Cuphead didn't invent everything?
See, there's a reason why, you know, old Mickey Mouse, why his face is all, like, white, but the rest of him is black.
Yeah.
And he's wearing those white gloves.
Wow.
Now, for the record, I'm not saying that this was, like, necessarily an intentional thing. That was just kind of how, like, the type of humor was at the time, and Walt Disney and Ub Iwerks and Max Fleischer and all those guys, you know, they kind of, those were, a lot of those guys had old vaudeville, you know, connections. And like I said, vaudeville kind of grew out of the minstrel tradition. And that all kind of bled over into that. Also, that also explains why Bugs Bunny also wears gloves as well. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, but see, even though minstrel shows basically died out as like an actual perform kind of entertainment, like professional, it still had amateur stuff that happened all the time, especially in high schools in the South.
Oh, dear.
And I know this because I've seen my grandma's senior year of high school yearbook, and they had a minstrel show at her school. Oh, yeah. Had a whole club dedicated to it. And they got two pages in the yearbook. But by the 1980s, most people had figured out that this type of stuff really wasn't okay. Of course, the rest of the world didn't quite get the message just yet. See, there's a reason why you occasionally will still see like old merchandise from, say, Europe or Asia that has blackface caricatures on it. And that's because a lot of those places, once they were exposed to like American popular culture, all that stuff I just mentioned earlier kind of bled in with it. And the thing is, though, is a lot of those places didn't have that kind of racial sort of stereotyping. Well, I mean, they had racial stereotyping, but not of that time. And, of course, a lot of these places were pretty homogenous to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how you get something like Jinx in Pokemon.
Yeah.
Mr. Popo.
Or Mr. Popo from Dragon Ball. Actually, a lot of those early Dragon Ball manga volumes, they have a lot of blackface stuff in them. So much so that when Viz released the English versions, they actually had to like censor the mouths
to make it, like, just
a blank white spot.
There's like the black guy that works at Red Ribbon,
mm-hmm.
who has unusually big lips.
Yep.
Yep.
Now again, that wasn't out of any kind of racial spite or anything. It was just
pure ignorance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's still a bunch of like old manga from Osamu Tezuka that may never make it over here to the U.S. because he used a lot of blackface caricatures in his old stuff. Now, keep in mind, that is stuff that was like shortly after World War II. So, but yeah, unfortunately, you know, I would actually say probably even by the late 70s, people began to get the idea that, you know, this isn't really cool. You know, it would still, you know, and eventually that would also, you know, expand outwards into other, you know, other ethnic minorities. You know, that's why we don't have anything like, you know, Mickey Rooney in Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yeah.
Why you don't really see that much anymore, unless, you know, it's an Adam Sandler movie. But
just even just weird shit like was Emma Stone was supposed to be half Asian Hawaiian girl,
yeah,
in that movie. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, she's white as hell.
Yeah,
there's no fooling people.
And well, I guess I've got to end that there because that's where we're gonna get into our stories next because I just wanted to sort of give you that sort of general bit of information before we start talking about
a primer.
A primer about why this shit is not okay.
And I think at a certain point for like these stories, it became kind of the risque kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is why teenagers flock to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you tell them something's not okay and they're like, oh shit, we should look into this.
Mm-hmm. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. Okay, are you ready? Here we go. All right. So as always, with the starting off the show proper, we have to start off with our assholes of the week. And basically, the assholes of the week are just whatever the fuck is happening to Virginia right now.
Yeah.
So this all started when the Democratic governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam, somebody, apparently a political opponent of someone, dug
up... Certainly no Republicans.
Apparently dug up a yearbook from when he was in medical school back in the mid-80s. I think it was 1984. Mm-hmm. And they show the page where he's featured on. And so, in that page, he's basically got, you know, he's dressed up nice and everything. It's just an average portrait. And then you see him in like a proper suit and that's there. And then you see this picture of these two individuals, one of whom is very obviously in blackface and the other is dressed up in a KKK robe, you know, hood and all.
Yeah.
Now,
first off, I have to say, why does a medical school have a yearbook?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I was wondering that too.
I can understand like a normal like college, But a medical school, like, don't these people have better things to do?
Yeah, like, don't you have other things to be concerned about being a medical school?
Yeah, like you're, you know, doing your actual on-site work or your schoolwork. I guess I had plenty of time to dress up as KKK members and blackface.
Yeah. But here's the thing. At first, I was willing to at least at first give him the benefit of the doubt, because at first it did seem like one of those guilt by association type things. Like, you know, until I actually, you know, looked at the yearbook, and you find out basically all of these places, they get like a page and a half dedicated to each individual. So that brings up the questions like, okay, so then why is this on his page? Is he one of the two people in there? And let's be honest, Ralph Northern himself didn't really help matters, because, okay, at first he's like, yes, it was terrible, I acknowledge it. Then he said, I might be one of the people in that picture. Then he came back, rolled it back, and said, no, actually, I'm not the person in that picture. However, I did don myself up in blackface once because we were having a Michael Jackson costume contest.
Which, and somebody in the press conference asked if he could do the moonwalk.
Yeah.
And it took his wife telling him this is not the right time to do that.
Yeah.
To keep him from actually doing that in the press conference.
Yeah.
Which is like, okay, this is over.
Yeah.
You can't come back from this shit.
No.
But somehow he's still there.
Yeah. And first of all, I just want to point out, this was like 1984 and 1985. You didn't have to dress up in blackface to do Michael Jackson.
No, you could wear the red jackets and the gloves.
I mean, Corey Feldman used to do that shit all the time, and he didn't paint up his face, so...
Weird Al.
Yeah, Weird Al did it.
It's like, you know, Michael Jackson has more unique clothing than his physical appearance.
Yeah. What this unfortunately... I think kind of unfortunately reminds people is that, remember we used to have something in the U.S. called Dixiecrats?
Yeah.
They were the Southern pro-segregation wing of the Democratic Party, you know, before the Southern strategy went into effect. Mm. Yeah, this is kind of sort of the remnants of that shit. It didn't quite go away, and... Oh, I wish it stopped there with just Mr. Northrum, but
I think also there's just – this is a lot of residual shit from the fact that Virginia was the headquarters of the South.
Yeah.
Especially when the Confederacy was all going on.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it looks like it's in the northern part of the U.S., it is. Yeah, you know, this is the home of George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and all that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of residual shit that's obviously the white people never – came to terms with. And so, yeah, it's not even a party thing here. It's just everybody has this sort of stuff ingrained that probably wears down with each new generation. Because I imagine the kids of today probably most likely do not have any interest in blackface.
Yeah.
But
you know what this reminds me of, honestly? And this is kind of a weird analogy to make. But you guys familiar with a septic burp?
Yeah.
It's kind of like that, but on a cultural level.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's actually a really good analogy.
And it's all these things that have been buried below the surface, and now they just come up and stink up the place, and now we have to clean everything up again.
Yeah. And I wish it ended there, but no, we got even more shit to go along.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, so along with Mr. Northrum, there is Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax, who has alleged to have sexually assaulted a woman, not just in 2004, but another person came forward today who claimed that he assaulted her back in 2000.
So yeah, this is sort of people looking at the succession line, because like, okay, if this guy is out, who's next? And it's like, oh, this guy, okay, he's fucked up, so who's our third person?
Well, that would be the Attorney General, Mark Herring, who admitted to wearing blackface at a party in 1980.
Okay.
So it's a fourth choice.
Finally, well, I don't know, but we've also
I think I saw, if you remember, there was an election in Virginia that ended in a tie.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think they kept going through tiebreakers that eventually there was like a, they picked a name out of a hat, coin toss, all this shit. And then the guy that won, was the Republican. Like that guy is the fourth in line. It's like, oh, this guy that essentially won a tie by, you know, a coin toss. Like, okay, this is what, this is how fucked Virginia is right now.
Yeah.
And then I'm actually thinking, like, okay, who's the highest ranking black person? Because these people all like black people so much.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just put one in charge.
Yeah.
Then I heard somebody say, that's probably not a great idea. As far as the person that would be. It's like, oh, okay, how about a dog? Everybody likes dogs. Dogs can't do anything too bad.
No ideas left at that point.
It's just like, oh, they should just have an emergency election this fall. It's like, all right, do over. Let's get some new people in here. If you've ever worn blackface,
you are immediately disqualified.
We need the 15 people in Virginia of age and qualification that have not done blackface to step forward.
Yeah. Oh, but it doesn't end there, because the current state senator from Virginia, Tommy Norman, it was revealed this week that he oversaw the creation of the Virginia Military Institute's yearbook from 1968, which features just a whole host of awful shit.
God damn it.
Yeah, lots of blackface. He's the state Senate majority leader, mm-hmm. a Republican. So just in case you're wondering if this is just a Democrat issue.
It's yeah.
As a bunch of blackface, racist pictures, Confederate flags, and I guess also some racial slurs in it.
Yep.
Oh, nice.
So the N-word is used at least once, and a student is listed as being from Bangkok, Thailand, is referred to with anti-Chinese, anti-Japanese slurs. Blurb under one man's picture says he was known as the barracks Jew, having his finger in the finances of the entire corps.
Ooh.
Okay.
Yeah. In case you didn't realize how that the South was really fucking racist back in the day.
Yeah.
Well,
why do people suck?
Because really... people.
All right. But.
So yeah, fuck Virginia.
Yeah, just. God damn it, Virginia. See, now you realize why the District of Columbia never wanted to incorporate into that state.
They should just be their own state at this point.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Anyway, so to wipe that taste out of our mouths, because, God, I feel like gagging after all of that.
Let's have an adult in the room.
Yeah. We have our hero of the work, and our hero of this week is Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from New York, who this week went during a Senate committee on campaign finance laws, basically managed to, in very simple terms and really about 5 minutes or less, basically showed how broken our campaign finance laws really are. And yeah, she didn't skirt around the issue. She didn't pretty it up. She basically just laid it out flat, and
she had like a 5 minute segment to ask questions of the people they were talking to.
Mm-hmm.
She's basically talking about how, you know, is she allowed to take unlimited amount of campaign donations from big corporate companies and lobbyists, and it's like, yeah, that's fine. Let's see. Lack of meaningful safeguards against corporate capture. Is there any hard limit that I have in terms of what legislation I'm allowed to touch? Based on the special interest funds that I accepted, there's no limits. How vulnerable the office of the president is, in particular to moneyed influence. Every person in his body is being held to a higher ethical standard than the president of the United States. because they have less laws than the people in Congress. And I'll say that the very people serving with her on this this committee are most probably compromised by these interests too. We have these influences existing in this body, which means that these influences are here in this committee shaping the questions that are being asked of you all. And she does it all, you know, as a game, essentially just asking questions of these people about the campaign finance laws. Basically, it's mostly yeses and noes. Pretty simple stuff. And so I definitely recommend you just watch the video. It's about 5 minutes long, and it should show you how much we need the campaign like overhaul stuff that they're trying to push through.
You know, I love how the right keeps trying to paint her as an idiot.
Yeah.
No, the idiots that are the people that are lining up to get their asses kicked by her.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 1% really don't like her.
No.
They are legit terrified of her.
Yeah, she understands their bullshit.
Yeah. And she doesn't give a shit about decorum either. So you just – I swear, there's that one photo they took of her when – so, yeah, Trump gave his stupid State of the Union address last week. Was it this week or last week?
This week.
Yeah, it was this week. We're not really talking about it much because there ain't really anything of substance in it.
I just went and got the facts from PolitiFact afterward.
Yeah. Other than the fact that he claims that he wants to completely wipe out HIV from the United States within his presidential term, which ain't gonna happen. but there's this one picture of Cortez. She's sitting behind Joe Manchin. And, you know, Joe Manchin, like all the other sycophants, you know, he's got to applaud after every sentence. And Cortez is just staring into the back of his head like she's trying to set him on fire with his with her mind. But yeah, basically the right is doing everything they possibly can to make her out to be this terrifying figure. She's either stupid or she's greedy or, you know, and keep in mind, she only took office last month.
Yep.
Yeah. I even saw people trying to claim that she has like a 340 credit score. She's been evicted twice and whatnot. It's like, okay, she's a normal person.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you think this makes her seem worse?
Yeah.
Like, no, she's better than the rich people that are in Congress.
Yeah.
People that have no idea what real people have to deal with.
Yeah.
But I did like the one thing I saw from the State of the Union address is Nancy Pelosi giving the really patronizing clap at Trump.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's the show your support clap.
I think I saw one of her siblings was like, I know that clap. That's the clap of the disappointed older sister.
Yeah. Also, did you notice her necklace?
Yeah.
It was a blue necklace with two red balls in the center. I'm going to guess those are Trump's.
But yeah, anyway. They're a bunch of the women senators wearing white.
Mm-hmm.
Which people try to paint them as being, I don't know, bitchy women. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no. They actually have like a unified viewpoint on this whole thing.
Yeah. Anyway, speaking of Cortez, to start off the proper show proper, her and Senator Ed Markey came forward this week and introduced their Green New Deal. You may remember this is the big thing people have been talking about for a while now.
Yes.
So let's take a look, see what's inside this Green New Deal. Let's see. So, and very broad, you know, and we're getting this off of NPR, but basically it calls for 10-year national mobilizations towards accomplishing a series of goals that the resolution lays off. Amongst other things, it asks for upgrading all existing buildings in the country for energy efficiency, which I'm going to be completely honest, that should have happened 30-something years ago. But
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, like even basic things like getting rid of lead paint.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have not done that in this country.
Yeah.
No. Still tons of houses with lead paint on it.
Still tons of places with asbestos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, another one is working with farmers to eliminate pollution and greenhouse gas emissions as much as technologically feasible, while at the same time supporting family farms and promoting the universal access to healthy food. I know that sounds impossible, but keep in mind, and I don't know, and a lot of people know this. You guys know who George Washington Carver is, right?
Yes.
He's often mistaken as the guy who invented peanut butter. Well,
okay.
He didn't invent peanut butter, but you know what he did do? He came up with a couple of different farming ideas that basically put nutrients back into the soil in the Southeast so that the Southeast became good farming grounds again. Because at that point, a lot of the soil in the South that wasn't being used to grow cotton was basically impossible to farm. And he did all that back in the early 1900s.
Yeah.
So if he can do that, we sure as shit can accomplish this.
Yeah.
So yeah, eliminating pollution and greenhouse gas emissions. It's often said that, you know, cows and beef specifically are one of the biggest greenhouse emitters. You know, cow farts.
Yeah.
Yep.
But also keep in mind that like 70% of all the emissions in the world are basically the responsibility of like a handful of corporations.
Yeah.
So
there's the whole thing that's, what is it, pistachios in California takes up a ton of water there,
mm-hmm.
for a state that has been often in droughts.
Drought.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, there's maybe one thing you could do here. Limit the amount of pistachios, because fuck them.
Yeah. Honestly, they're not even that good.
Hey.
Yeah, I think there a little can't bit of be offense any, to that, but because those are a lifesaver when I'm on keto. And
oh yeah, but see, I'm not on keto.
Yeah.
Nope. I mean, it's not like we can't have any.
No,
just don't need as much.
What it really needs is the farming in California needs to diversify.
Yeah,
that's what it really needs. That's one of the reasons why. That's what one of the things that also helped the South a lot back in the day, because. Yeah. Like I said, for most of the agrarian existence in the South, most of it was cotton based. And once the Dust Bowl came around, it basically forced a lot of the farmers to diversify their crops and start going into, you know, growing vegetables.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to diversify your nuts.
Yeah. And look, if they need to grow something else, just, you know, get somebody from the government, you know, from the Department of Agriculture, go out there, teach them how to grow something new. Not that big of a deal, damn.
Yeah.
That hard. Also, as for universal access to healthy food, that is more than anything just a logistics issue. Because, and, you know, Pat used to work in Walmart too, so yes. He can back me up on this. There is plenty of healthy, nutritious, fresh vegetables to go around.
Yep.
But because they may not look so pretty, or because, you know, they have, you know, they don't look as marketable, we end up trashing at least 30% of them.
Yep.
Probably even more.
We trash a ton of food.
Yeah.
Just in general, there's like those eat by dates or use by dates for food. That's
Those are pure bullshit.
Well, those are just company like recommendations.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that they're bad, which you know, for stuff like milk and such, you can tell when it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to dump it out if it doesn't stink.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, like your snacks, your pretzels, chips, all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Worst thing is it gets stale.
Yeah.
And even then it's still okay.
Yeah.
Just eat
a lot of countries outside of the US, they actually require grocery stores to like put like produce that they don't consider marketable into like food stores and stuff. So
yeah. Now the problem we have is we don't have like laws or tax laws, you know, making it easier for them to do that and get some sort of write off for it.
Yeah.
Because
And that's sort of the big issue is a lot of stores think there's going to be like health violations if they donate stuff and finds out, oh, this, it might have actually been bad or whatever. And it needs to go through some things and get an overhaul of that whole system.
Yeah. Again, it's mostly a logistics thing more than anything else.
Yeah.
Next up.
You could easily have like a government, you know, team that is all about picking up stuff from, you know, grocery stores and restaurants and such.
Yeah, it's called the FDA. Get on it, damn it. Next up, overhauling the transportation system. Let me start that again. Overhauling the transportation systems to reduce emissions, including expanding electric car manufacture, building charging stations everywhere, and expanding high-speed rail to a scale where air travel stops becoming necessary.
Yeah, you know, I just saw people trying to suggest this means, like, stopping air travel completely. Like, no. It's stopping the casual kind of air travel.
Yeah.
So that you don't have to fly from, you know, like, San Francisco to L.A.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and if Seattle you want, to L.A. Like, yeah, stuff like if, that, where you could just easily take a train down.
Exactly. And if you want your model on how to do that, go ask the folks in Japan.
Yes.
Yeah, they figured that shit out.
Yeah. They will be more than happy to help you figure it out.
And this sort of stuff that's needed because we need to get off of gas cars.
Yeah.
And fast. And I think you might even have to go as extreme as to just stop registering gas cars at a certain point.
Yeah.
Get electric cars out there and keep the tax benefits for that stuff lasting a lot longer.
Yeah.
Because whenever Tesla puts out like a new model, there's tax benefits for like the first like 100,000 or whatever, and then after that, it gets like worse and worse and worse. And it's I would just have some really good stuff to keep people buying it for good.
My parents actually bought themselves a golf cart specifically for that reason. Because, you know, it's all electric and you can use it to just get around the neighborhood.
Is it street legal?
Yeah, it is. But then again, this is Georgia. Anything is fucking street legal. I mean, you know, get the, you know, the trade, you know, not just Japan either, but also the UK, you know, they've got a pretty large train system as well. A lot of the places in Europe, I mean, Europe is just about the size of the United States. You know, it's, if they can pull it off and they actually being a bunch of different countries all linked by rail, we can fucking do it here for just one country.
Yeah. The problem is trains aren't a sexy way to travel anymore.
Well, we need to change that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How fast does a train usually travel?
Here or in Japan?
Either. Well, I mean, besides a bullet train.
Yeah, 50, 60 miles an hour.
Well, then let's create the 56 mile club. See? I just started. Yeah. Next up, a guaranteed job with a family-sustaining wage, adequate family and medical leave, paid vacations, and retirement security for every American. Okay, admittedly, these are going to be a bit harder to accomplish.
Yeah.
Because
being fair to people is not the Republican way.
No. But also, there's just a logistics thing as well. So, like, the job guarantee thing is something that came about during the Great Depression with the original New Deal.
Yeah.
Now, stuff like the family sustaining wage, which, you know, means raising the minimum wage, adequate family and medical leave, paid vacations and retirement security. This stuff right here is actually pretty common in Europe already.
Yeah.
You know, ask anybody who lives in Germany or the Netherlands. This is pretty much just, you know, Denmark. This is pretty much just the status quo over there.
Yeah, where they have, like, guaranteed, like, 4 to 6 weeks of vacation a year.
Yeah.
We're here, a week we might be able to get.
Yeah. In Germany, they have something called Kindergeld, which is basically a large lump sum of money that they give to expectant mothers, specifically to, you know, pay for the cost of childbirth and, you know, babysitting, stuff like that. Medical leave, of course, that's, you know, medical insurance.
Yeah.
It's the guaranteed job thing that's going to be difficult. But yeah. The other stuff is more than easy to accomplish. And finally, high quality health care for all Americans, which is probably the easiest goddamn thing on this whole list.
Yeah, it's
Big Pharma is screaming already.
Yeah, and yet it's still the thing that'll be one of the most contentious things.
Because
I was watching some last week tonight from, I think it's 2016. And it's like, oh yeah, remember when Republicans were desperate to get this health care passed?
Yeah.
And couldn't figure out how to do any of that?
Mm-hmm.
And then ended up doing nothing. And they had both houses to do it. And it's like, oh. Because what high quality healthcare means is vastly different depending on how much money you have.
Yeah.
Because rich people want their high quality healthcare.
Yeah. And they don't want to have to share it with the poor.
Well, that, and they don't want to be told like they have to, you know, share the same system as it's like, no, if you want to pay for your own thing, have at it. The people that just don't want to go into huge debt. Because they had some health issue, they like to not do that.
Yeah,
they like to be able to actually survive after it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's apparently too much to ask for some people.
Yeah,
just some people. You know, it's first of all, I want everybody to be assured it's going to happen.
Yeah,
yeah.
They failed to get it done previously. Now it will be administered rectally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Either this happens by the ballot or we do it at the point of a gun, but it's going to happen.
Yeah. And it's, I think it's going to be the thing where just like Obamacare, once they have it and realize, you know, the benefits of it, they won't want to go back. The idea of being able to go into the hospital with like, okay, I have, you know, fucked up my hand.
Yeah.
Can we get this done? And you walk out and you're like, okay, that didn't cost much.
Yeah.
I can live.
Yeah. I'm lucky I didn't have to pay anything.
They didn't have to cut it off.
No.
That was cheaper.
Yeah. But anyway. All right. So, moving on, our next story. Liam Neeson. He has a certain set of skills. And
Sense is apparently not one of them.
Yeah. He revealed in an interview recently this week that after he heard that one of his friends was raped, he got so pissed off that he went out looking for any random black person he could find so he could kill them.
And keep in mind, he revealed this on a press junket for the new movie he's working on called Pursuit. Which is a good way to kill any interest in that movie.
Never work ever again.
Yeah. I think they ended the features press junket sessions after this for good reason. And yeah, Jesus Christ. Picking now to reveal this.
Yeah.
I understand why he might have wanted to get it off his chest. I guess something he's carried around since then.
A long time.
But this seems like the sort of thing you would...
talk to for your memoirs, your autobiography,
or talk
like that.
To a psychiatrist.
Yeah,
like don't let him help you deal with this stuff. Don't talk to an interviewer in the media and reveal this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like I feel for him, but it's also like Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
What the?
It's a good thing he didn't go through with it, but jeez.
Yeah. Mm. And I mean, you know, on some level, I can kind of understand the
immediate rage that
it's like, yeah, but yeah, there are better ways to handle that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, next up this week, ICE, aka America's Gestapo, arrested rapper 21 Savage because he's a UK citizen with an expired visa. So they've arrested him, detained him, and he's being held without bail.
And essentially trying to intimidate him into leaving the country.
Yeah.
This
Make
was
no
when,
mistake, this is 100% ICE being dicks because they can.
Yeah,
that's
and very... that part of ice, not you know the part that actually does something useful.
Yeah,
and which most everybody is like, wait, he's not from Atlanta, because he's been there
so much a part of the community.
Yeah,
and he's been there since he was 7.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, 21 years. I think even his wiki page said he was from Atlanta.
Yeah,
like nobody knew this until like he and his lawyer. You know, came out and revealed this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, he probably didn't say it because it didn't really matter. But also, his lawyer said, yeah, no, they've been, you know, applying to renew this stuff, you know, even as recently as last year. There was no issues other than them wanting to take down a black guy.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, ICE has a long history of just being dicks to people that are even legal.
Mm-hmm.
Citizens or immigrants, yeah. And all that. Yes, you know.
They do apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like he's a model citizen. There's no mm-hmm. reason to do this, and even just detaining him without any sort of bail, just treating him like some sort of criminal. It's like ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next up, Hawaii, the state of Hawaii. They are looking to increase the minimum age needed to purchase a pack of cigarettes to 100 years of age by 2024.
Yeah, they're going to be doing this step by step. So in 2020, it would be 30, 40 in 2021, 50 in 2022, and then 100 by 2024. So gradually go up.
Yeah, there's going to be a brisk... A brisk secondary industry in you know, fake IDs for older people,
yeah, or just people buying them up now,
yeah,
stocking up. But still, that'd be the most hilarious like fake ID thing. So it's like, oh, you know those pop up shops for Halloween? They suddenly got a second business. Because it's pretty easy way to tell somebody that's 25 from somebody that's 100.
Yeah.
You have to be a great makeup artist to make that convincing.
Now, what I immediately think of is Prohibition and how well that worked out.
Yeah, that's sort of my issue. But the thing about cigarettes, though, is that part of... That particular way of consuming tobacco is quickly becoming extinct.
Yeah.
Cigarette smoking has been going down exponentially pretty much every year over the last 20 years. And
yeah. And it's a universally bad thing for you.
Yeah.
For you and the people around you.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that it's just becoming harder to find places you can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm definitely just about this stuff. Like, seems like a neat idea
because
mm-hmm. you're banning it without actually banning it.
Yeah.
Because nobody's going to support an outright ban. But yeah.
Well, I think it's close enough to one that it'll get some really hard pushback.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I also think it's something that's probably a good idea for the most part. Because also, tobacco companies are shitty.
Oh, yes. They are the absolute scum of the earth.
Philip Morris is well known for that.
Yeah. But anyway.
It's like, they deserve it.
Yeah.
Tobacco companies.
All right. Next up. Jeff Bezos, the richest man in the world, came forward today claiming that that National Enquirer and, you know, the company that publishes it, ABI, have been trying to blackmail him over what they claim to be dick pics that he took.
Yeah, which he, for a guy that owns the Washington Post, he went to Medium
mm-hmm.
to announce this with a blog post called "No Thank You, Mr. Pecker."
That is referring to David Pecker,
the guy.
Who, yeah.
I was just like, okay, you know exactly what you're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But also, it's like, man, you got fucking billions of dollars.
Mm.
Fucking move on.
Yeah.
Like, who gives a shit about your goddamn dick?
Yeah.
And
there's also like really shitty stuff about this Because I guess National Enquirer had people like following him around for months across states, like trying to dig up an affair, supposed affair.
Yeah.
Yeah, that led to his divorce and all that. And it's like, sure, but also, who gives a fuck?
Yeah, well, like, National Enquirer is kind of a scummy tabloid, as you
can get. Yeah,
because they've also been involved with the president.
Yeah.
McCullen.
And this may very much be them signing their death warrant, because if you've got the wrath of the richest man going against you...
Yeah, you don't beat that.
Yeah. Hmm. And it turns out that now some other people are coming forward saying that the National Enquirer have been blackmailed them, Terry Crews being one of them.
Yeah.
So,
I could see this just ending up with Bezos buying AMI and just shutting them down.
Yeah.
Easy way to get everything done. Guess what? Good luck. Here's a severance package. Get the fuck out.
it's weird, though, because you think they've been involved with Trump and Cohen and whatnot, and it's very well known that Trump does not like Bezos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, may have something.
Yeah, there are thoughts that can be connected there.
Yeah.
Yeah. More like a line at this point.
Basically, I'm seeing this sort of end up like with Hulk Hogan, Peter Thiel.
Yeah,
and Gawker.
They're going to get the Gawker package.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Next up. Due to climate change, it looks like the Earth may lose its famous blue color in about 80 years. The key word there being may.
Yes.
Yeah, so this is coming from a new study from MIT. And they show that the climate change has been significantly affecting phytoplankton, the tiny sea creatures in the world's oceans, which will lead to the change in color, intensifying its blue and green regions. There would be a noticeable difference in the color of 50% of the ocean by the end of the 21st century. It could potentially be quite serious. Different types of phytoplankton absorb light differently. And if climate change shifts one community of phytoplankton to another, that will also change the types of food webs that they can support. And they say the blue regions, such as the subtropics, will turn shades darker, reflecting even less phytoplankton and life in general in those waters. Some regions that are greener now, such as near the poles, may turn a deeper hue as warmer temperatures brew up more diverse phytoplankton. And if you don't know, the oceans appear blue because water molecules alone absorb almost all the sunlight, except for the blue part of the spectrum.
Yeah.
But with any organism in the ocean, phytoplankton, for instance, the pigment, it'll absorb less in the green portions and reflect more green light. So they essentially developed a global model that simulates the growth and interaction of different species of phytoplankton for this thing.
It's going to look a lot different if it's considerably darker. That doesn't look... Yeah, it doesn't look. But then again, we can't see it anyway because we're here.
Anyway,
it's like, what are you talking about? The water's clear.
That's going to be the attitude that you hear from a lot of people. Yeah. It's like, I can't see it anyway. So,
yeah, but the Earth is flat anyway.
Well, I am not going down that rabbit hole.
Not tonight, anyway.
Nope, we got lots left to cover.
God. Anyway. Next up, we got an Ontario man story. Because guess what? There are also stupid drunk white people in Canada as well. All right. This is coming from Global News Canada. The Ontario Police, OPP. Yeah, you know me. Actually, what does that acronym stand for, Phil?
The actual acronym?
Yeah.
Ontario Police Patrol.
Thank you. Wasn't sure about that one. Ours are usually something like OPD, police department, but whatever. They are asking for a person they are calling Mr. Sexy after seizing stolen license plates from a speeding teenager.
Yeah, so there are a couple weird notes about this.
Really?
Okay, so
you can't be serious.
Hey Phil, so what is a G2 driver?
Two. That's actually not a term I've heard of before.
Yeah, they quote here a 17-year-old G2 driver. Okay, I was wondering if that was a thing or not.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's the graduated system that we have here.
Okay.
For, yeah, you don't actually... First, when you can get your driver's license at 16, but then you have to graduate to basically the full license at 18.
Oh, so you guys have a two-layer system.
Yeah.
And we just have limits permits.
On the initial license.
Yeah, what we have is over here down here in the U.S. is you get the learner's permit, which is something you get when you're 16. Yeah. And then once you graduate to around... I think it's like 18 years old. You have to go in, take the test, and then you get your driver's license. Oh,
yeah. And I think that's
here,
different.
You can, here
state.
You can get it at 16, but and it is a full license, but you only have 2 points on that license.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you fuck
it's
up,
very similar to our system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think with ours, you have a learner's permit, and you can only drive with your parents.
Yeah.
And at least here, you have to also take driving course.
Yeah.
And have like X amount of hours supposedly with your parents, which that's on an honor system, I guess.
And really
I think at 17, I could get my license, which for me was just a weird system because we took the full year, never did the course because my parents were just busy. Then we went to go take the test again, which was easy. I didn't study and I passed it. It's not too hard. It's a lot of it's common sense. And then somehow in the process of getting the permit, which is like three papers, it's like a white paper, a yellow, and a pink, we lost the pink one. So when we went to go get the class stuff settled, I was like, oh, you need the pink papers. Like, fuck! Had to go get the test again. And then we went directly back and got that all settled, and then I got my license like a couple days before my senior year. So I could drive to school, but yeah. 17-year-old G2 driver going 150 kilometers per hour. Which, how fast is that in miles?
It's a good clip.
Yep.
Yeah.
93 miles an hour.
Yeah.
That's pretty fast.
Yeah.
Okay. Second problem, what they were driving. A Maserati. Who lets a 17-year-old provisional driver get a hold of a Maserati?
My Maserati does 185. I lost my license. Now I don't drive.
And yeah, the second thing is they had license plates for a Mr. Sexy. They did not belong to the car. Obviously, when they get pulled over, they run the plates. They're like, this does not belong to this car. And now they're basically posted on their Twitter. Sergeant Kerry Schmidt posted pictures of the two Mr. Sexy plates. Are these yours? Looking for the rifle owner of hashtag Mr. Sexy. They were unlawfully attached to a Maserati driven by a 17-year-old G2 driver in Mississauga. Hashtag not cool. Which,
although, yeah, fun. I mean, if he's having the midlife crisis that would possess him to get those license plates, then he probably needs the Maserati.
Yeah.
It didn't belong to the car. So this teen was speeding the Maserati, but he also clipped the plates from somebody else's car.
Yeah.
So, kid.
But also makes you wonder, do vanity plates not actually get registered the same way that normal plates do in Canada?
I mean, obviously, they ran the plates and found out that they didn't belong to the car, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, also, they know what car it belongs to, but they don't know where it is.
And
it
doesn't have any plates on it.
So. They might have just run, like, the VIN number or whatever on the car. Right. I don't know. But they have the plates and don't know who they belong to, because they're registered to somebody.
Yeah.
It's like...
Registered to somebody.
It's like, who... How do you not know who these plates are registered to?
Yeah.
I just think it's confusing.
That's weird.
It's like, I figured that's what your whole point of a system is, so having all this stuff registered to. It's like, okay, we'll look up this Mr. Sexy. But I assume lots of people are just going to get fake Mr. Sexy stickers on their cars now.
Yep.
This is going to get worse before it gets better.
But yeah, that's what happened in Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not so much Ontario man as Ontario team.
Yeah.
Well,
the guy who got the plates has some issues too.
Yeah. I would like to think that Canada is above this, but I've also been watching Trailer Park Boys on Netflix. So
fantastic show.
Yes, Canada does have white trash, and it is very similar to ours in almost every way possible. Yeah. Anyway. New Zealand. Scientists in New Zealand put out an announcement saying that they are looking out for the owner of a USB stick that they found in seal poop.
Yep.
Ow.
Yes, I was going to say, first of all, ow.
Yeah, so
I'm shifting uncomfortably in my chair as a result of this.
I'm sorry, I'm not plugging that in.
Yeah, they already did that for you. So they were doing some tests on leopard seal scat and had this stuff frozen in their lab for about a year, more than a year, it says here. And so when they went to go inspect it, they
bonus prize
figured out, there's a USB stick in here. They found that 3 weeks ago. They were going through it, and they say here first they defrost the sample. Then you basically have to sift it. You put it under the cold tap, get all the gross stuff off, swishing it around a bit, and separate the bones, feathers, seaweed, and other stuff that's in it. This all happening when they discovered something large and hard concealed deep inside the scat was a USB stick. Jody here was not impressed. It is very worrying that these amazing Antarctic animals have plastic like this inside them. But the memory stick was in reasonably good condition, considering where it had come from. So they left it to dry out for the next couple of weeks in the hope that maybe it'll see what information it contained. And ironically, there are photos of sea lions at Porpoise Bay in the Catlins, and a video of a mum and baby seal lion frolicking in the shallows. The only clue to who might have taken them is the nose of a blue kayak. They have a photo here of a sea lion on a Southland beach. They don't really know whose it is. They're saying if they're yours and you want the USB stick back, it comes with a price. Leopard seal researchers would like to see some more leopard seal scat, please.
Okay. It's pretty obvious how this happened.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
People on vacation or going around. Somebody bends over, drops a USB key, and they don't notice it until it's way too late.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
And they want, yeah. So give us more seal poop and you'll have your USB key. But that is the weirdest ransom I have ever
had. Well, they know it's somebody that was at least a fan of sea lions and such.
Yeah.
They're like, well, you help us out, we'll give this back.
Yeah.
Send us your shit.
Literally.
No, not your shit. Somebody else's shit.
Yeah.
Seal shit, please.
Anyway. They all can right. Tell. Speaking of shit. Patrick, for some of you don't know, he does call center stuff.
I'm a... basically utility account manager for major realtors.
Yeah.
So I work with utility companies all across the country.
Yeah. The thing about utility being in utility companies, things that they have to deal with things like, water, electricity, stuff like that.
Sewage
in particular. And you know what, Patrick, just take it from here.
In my travels today, I found my way at the website of a utility provider called JEA. Okay. And in their area of service, they seem to be having issues with fatbergs.
Yeah. Now, if you live in a major metropolitan area, you probably have been informed of or have a good idea of what a fatberg is. But if you don't, well, basically a fatberg is what happens when a bunch of yuppie assholes flush down all the shit down a toilet you're not supposed to flush down a toilet.
And one of the biggest offenders is bacon grease.
Yep.
Yes.
And that stuff, it gets down into the sewage system. It tends to clump together and forms this gigantic, gross, gelatinous mass that is called a fatberg because it's mostly fat.
I think in the UK they recently dislodged one that was about the size of an SUV from a waterway.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, I don't want that job.
But, yeah, so, anyway, as you were saying, Pat?
Yeah, they, JEA decided to go on a sort of public service announcement campaign in the most hilarious way possible. And if you go to their website, JEA.com, you will find a trailer for a fictional movie that I actually would like to see them make, to be honest with you.
Somebody contact Jordan Peele. I can totally see him making this.
Well, I think it's just best that you see it for yourself. My hat's off to them for coming up with this.
But, somebody in that company is a frustrated filmmaker, and yes. He just got the job of a lifetime.
And they knocked it out of the park. But, yeah, I highly encourage you to go see it. And this is just the kind of thing that you encounter sometimes in my line of work. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you'll see a provider make a short film about pollutants in the waterways. Sometimes you'll hear about a utility provider blowing up a neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an interesting job.
Yeah.
It really is. But that was just something that brightened my day, and I had to share it with all of you. So, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, where's the Kickstarter for this one?
I want to see this become a thing.
Somebody give this to – find Jordan Peele's Twitter account and show this to him.
At the very least, we'll get an interesting response.
Yeah. Anyway – all right, next story. We got a science story, and it's about your anus. Your anus.
Thud.
And basically, NASA's got a telescope, the Hubble telescope, watching the weather on Uranus and Neptune, and Uranus looks really freaking weird right now.
Yeah, so basically, they have shared some findings for what's going on with Uranus and Neptune. And Uranus is currently in its summer season, which, if you're wondering how long a season lasts on Uranus, it's 21 Earth years.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a long summer.
Yep.
That's what the summers feel like in Utah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it has this, white cloud, I guess they call it, on its polar cap. That has just been growing bigger and bigger. And they also have seen smaller bright clouds of methane ice just below it. And for Neptune, where the seasons last for about 41 Earth years, they're in the middle of winter in the Northern Hemisphere. The hemisphere is currently sporting a massive dark storm that stretches about 6,800 miles across. And they aren't sure what phenomenon creates these dark storms on Neptune. Though these tempests seem to pop up about twice a decade and disperse within about 2 years. So they suspect that the storms creep upward through the planet's atmosphere, lifting the ingredients of deeper layers of the atmosphere to the top. And near the dark storm currently on Neptune, Hubble spotted another atmospheric feature, sparkling white companion clouds, which scientists have spotted around dark storms in the past. I think they're full of methane ice that's been rapidly pushed upward and frozen.
Yeah. Alrighty then.
Yeah, these weather phenomena look really cool, though, in
the
photos.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. But, wow. So apparently our planet isn't the only one that's having weird weather patterns this year.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it was...
And it's a lot colder over there, I'll just point that out.
Well, I should also point out, it got up to 80 yesterday.
Yeah,
where I'm at.
Yeah.
So,
I think we were at 53, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well.
You know, typical February weather.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. This year it was announced, and yes, we're now in the entertainment portion of the show. It was announced that the Oscars will not have a host this year.
Okay, how's that work?
Basically, every presenter will be hosting their segment.
Huh.
Which they have last done was in 1989, which I believe is very infamous for being very bad.
Yeah.
I see here it started with an ill-advised musical number from Rob Lowe and Snow White's, and ended with 17 celebrities, including Julie Andrews and Paul Newman, singing an open letter to the producer of the show condemning the production.
Okay, then.
Okay. Well, have you seen the Oscar nominees for this year? Yeah, I'll just leave that.
Yeah.
I know Black Panther got nominated for Best Picture. First comic movie to get that nod.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it won't win because it's a comic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Academy are a bunch of assholes, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. Bunch of old people.
Yeah.
I think Spike Lee got a Best Director nod for Black Klansman, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Haven't seen that yet.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I've heard good things. Definitely want to see it.
Next up, we have gotten confirmation that Warner Brothers will be working on a spin-off horror movie about the Trench from Aquaman. Because apparently Aquaman made them a boatload of cash. And
yeah, well, apparently it was actually pretty good.
Oh, it's cheesy as all hell, but...
Yeah, but it was still fun, so...
And so they took, like, a very small segment where they introduced the Trench.
Mm-hmm.
These are these weird fucking creatures.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, let's make a movie about this that has none of the main cast, so I assume it's a lot cheaper to make.
Yeah, probably.
Just cast-wise. You don't have to spend that much money because you don't have Jason Momoa and Amber Heard and all them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So these weird CG creatures. Make it a horror movie.
Yeah.
Well,
spin-off horror movies are kind of big right now.
Yeah, and I guess the team that's produced Aquaman also worked on The Conjuring.
Mm-hmm.
So they definitely have some history with that. Chops. Yeah, and right. I guess these things were.
I don't hate this idea.
Yeah.
So.
And I guess these the Trench were created by Geoff Johns and introduced in the Aquaman storyline in 2011.
Hmm.
And I guess they come from the Mariana Trench.
Yeah.
Which also relates to the Meg in Pacific Rim, where the evil creatures come from as well. And yeah, so I guess it's over $1 billion worldwide. $325 million here in North America and $784 million internationally.
Wow.
Yeah. Not bad for a DC movie.
Yeah.
Nope. Yeah.
The first one to get over a million or a billion.
Yeah, over a billion.
Kind
of wish that would have been Wonder Woman, but.
Yeah. Okay. So the 22nd highest worldwide grosser of all time.
All right.
Which I think it's still behind the Batman movies that Christopher Nolan did.
Because
I think those were a bit higher.
Yeah, and those were good.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Next up, we got bad Netflix news because apparently they've signed a deal with Goop and Gwyneth Paltrow for some stupid documentary series.
Yep.
The nice thing about Netflix is you don't have to watch it either.
Nope.
Yeah, but they shouldn't give money to shitty people.
Yeah.
This is a pretty easy one to say, you know what, fuck you.
Yeah, it's just, no, just not going to bother.
Because they still sell, like, the eggs and shit that are more likely to poison you than anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't believe she hasn't, you know, been sued by... Instead, she's getting a documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess we'll leave that one as a PSA saying that's coming. Don't watch
it. Yeah. Actually, go find it and give it a thumbs down.
Downvote it, yeah. Do that. Yeah. That's a bad.
Oh, there's a good comment here. She is the Alex Jones of women's health.
Shockingly accurate.
Like, I would approve a series that is somebody taking down Goop. Mm. Like, Last Week Tonight, just about Goop.
Netflix has a documentary coming out about Facebook and the whole Cambridge Analytica for that.
Yeah.
That should be really good.
What was the movie that was about Facebook?
The Social Network?
Yeah, Social Network 2, just call that.
No, this one's a documentary, so I guess they could call it Social Network.
Yeah. Here's what happened after that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, now in better Netflix news, those who don't know, they recently released for the record, very good documentary, if you haven't seen it, the Ted Bundy tapes. Mm. And they are now going to add more content about Ted Bundy. Do I need to explain who Ted Bundy was?
No, maybe. I don't know.
Let me put this.
Being from Utah, it's a little bit more ubiquitous.
Yeah,
I suppose.
Let me put it this way: before Jeffrey Dahmer, before John Wayne Gacy, there was Ted Bundy, and Ted Bundy was basically the eponymous American serial killer. He was charming, handsome, whose bloodlust basically took the lives of several dozen women. He was known for managing to escape from jail, I think, twice. And on the eve of when he was finally captured and put away for good, and he was going to be given the chair, he gave a very sort of self-serving interview with Dr. James Dobson from Focus on the Family, blaming his crimes on pornography.
Okay.
Good luck with that.
Shocking.
Well, he got the chair, so yeah, it was.
Didn't work out so well for him.
And yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. He was, you know, he's basically the real life version of Dexter. You know, handsome, charming. He does really, you know, he's able to really blend in very well into regular society, but was a serial killer who killed a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
had a lot of fans just because he was handsome.
Oh, yes. He got fan mail from women all the time when he was in prison.
Wasn't his whole trial just full of women that had the hots for him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, Jesus Christ, find people that aren't serial killers.
Well, I mean, guys like fucking Richard Ramirez and Charles Manson kept getting fan mail years after the fact, so.
We got married. Charles Manson did.
Yep. And finally, our ultimate piece. We now have a trailer for Taika Waititi's show on FX, What We Do in the Shadows.
Yep. It looks pretty good. Debuts on March 27th. And basically, it is like a comedy.
Yep.
And I guess they also made a feature film based on the same subject from these people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of expanding it into a show. But they say it's set in New York City. The show follows three vampires who have been roommates for hundreds and hundreds of years. And they have like a caretaker that brings like potential victims to them, of like people that are alone, I guess, that won't be necessarily noticed.
Yep.
And there's a good bit there where talking about how all the people out here are half drunk. He's like, no, I mean, they're half drunk, as in I've had half of their blood drunk. And so yeah, like their caretaker is kind of helping them out. And there's a good bit at the end where they're at the grocery store. He shows them like a Halloween decoration with a skeleton,
mm-hmm.
and the one dude just sets it on fire with his vampire magic. There's a good bit where they're just like going out in real life, obviously at night. Like the one guy gets his cape stuck in the cab, and starts driving away and drags him down the street. It's like, it seems like this could be pretty good.
Yeah, this looks just ridiculous enough to be worth watching.
Yeah.
It's not going to be, I don't think this is going to be for the people who want, like, the Vampire Chronicles and stuff like that.
No.
Stuff that's more serious, but
I think there's enough pretty serious vampire stuff out there.
Yeah, yeah. It's not Twilight, let's be honest.
Yeah. No, there's like True Blood and some of that sort of stuff out there.
To say that particular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Teenage.
Yeah. Which is, you know, years after the fact, is still going.
Yep.
For some reason, that particular little subgenre just will not die. Yeah. By the way, as for the actual movie, What We Do in the Shadows, it actually came out in 2014, and it's famous for the fact that it's one of those movies that was made on like a really tight budget and ended up like making, okay, so like it was made on a budget of $1.6 million, which is pretty low.
Nothing.
Yeah, as far as modern filmmaking it goes. And it made 6 times that at the box office. Mm. So.
Still not huge numbers, but good.
Yeah. Mm. And it seems like it could potentially be like a Dear White People where it's like, it had a good movie that some people liked.
Mm-hmm.
Or some people paid attention to at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets a second chance as like a TV show with the same basic ideas, and it potentially is going to take off.
Yeah.
It seems the sort of thing that if that movie was coming out now, get picked up by Netflix or Hulu or something like that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, that seems like something that, you know, Netflix or Amazon.
Which, I'm looking it up now, it's on Prime Video. So if you have Amazon Prime, you can watch it now. I guess spoil yourself, I guess.
Yeah.
Well. So yeah, I guess we got a show, folks.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, so I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, just something you want us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. Got it listed in the show notes, just in case you forget. Also, on top of iTunes, you can catch our little show at Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org. Pretty much anything that you're looking for. That you can find like any type of podcast that you want to listen to and enjoy with your mouth ears and taste that delicious aural chocolate that is my voice. Ain't that just the most beautiful image you can think of?
Right. Yeah, I'm not going near that one.
So yeah, with that, I have been your host, Most Brandon Perkins, and Felipe Calpo, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Sologi. I'd like to say good night. Please don't wear a black face. It's just not cool.